Star Tide Rising, Cassette 4.
Chapter 20. Galactics. Battle screamed all around the flotilla of tiny zappish warships.
"We have lost the Zaktau and the Zaklenu. That means a third of the zappish armed might is gone."
The elder zappish lieutenant sighed.
"So? Young one, tell me news, not things I already know."
"Our Zatini patrons spend their clients like reaction gas and commit their own forces miserly. Notice how they hang back, ready to flee if the battle gets too furious. Yet we they send into danger."
"That is ever their way," the other agreed.
"But if the Zapish fleet is destroyed here, in this futile fray, who will protect our three tiny worlds and enforce our rights?"
"Is that not what we have patrons for?"
The older lieutenant knew he was being ironic. He adjusted the screens to resist a sudden psionic attack, without even changing his tone of voice. His junior did not dignify the reply with a comment. He grumbled instead.
"What did these Earthlings ever do to us, anyway? In what way do they threaten our patrons?"
A searing blast from a Tandu battlecruiser just missed the left wing of the small Zapish scout. The junior lieutenant sent the ship into a wild, evasive maneuver. The senior lieutenant replied to the question as if nothing at all had happened.
"I take it you don't believe the story that the progenitors have returned."
The other only snorted while adjusting his torpedo sights.
"Aptly put, I, too, think this is merely part of a program to destroy the Earthlings. The senior patron races see the Terrans as a threat. They are wolflings, and therefore dangerous. They preach revolutionary uplift practices, more dangerous still. They are allies of the Timbrimi, an insult beyond forbearance, and they proselytize, an unforgivable offense."
The scout ship shuddered as the torpedo leapt toward the Tandu destroyer. Their tiny craft accelerated mightily to get away.
"Well, I think we should listen to the Earthlings," the junior lieutenant shouted. "If all the client races in the galaxy rebelled at once..."
"It has already happened," the elder interrupted. "Study the library records. 6 times in galactic history, and twice successfully."
"No! What happened?" "What do you think happened? The clients went on to become patrons of newer species, and treated them just the same as ever."
"I do not believe it. I cannot believe it."
The elder lieutenant sighed.
"Look it up." "I shall."
But he never did. An undetected improbability mine lay across their path. The tiny scout departed the galaxy in a manner that was picturesque, if ultimately lethal. Chapter 21. Denny and Toshio. Denny checked the charges one more time. It was dark and crowded in the close passage of the drill tree route. Her helmet's beam cast stark shadows through the thick maze of rootlets. She called upward.
"Are you almost finished, Toshio?"
He was planting his explosives in the upper section, near the surface of the metal mound.
"Yeah, Denny, if you're done, go back down now. I'll join you in a minute."
She couldn't see his flippered feet above her. His voice was distorted in the narrow, water-filled thicket. It was a relief to be allowed to leave. She picked her way downward carefully, fighting back waves of claustrophobia. This was no job Denny would ever have chosen, but it had to be done, and the two dolphins were by nature unqualified. Halfway down, she snagged herself on a strand of creeper. It didn't let go when she tugged. Thrashing only entangled her further, and she vividly recalled Toshio's story of the killer weed. Panic almost closed in, but she forced herself to stop kicking, to take a deep breath, and study the snare. It was just a dead vine wrapped around one leg. The strand parted easily under her knife. She continued her descent more cautiously and escaped at last into the grotto beneath the metal mound. Kipiru and Saut waited below. Hose-like breathers covered their blow mouths and wrapped around their torsos. The headlights of the two sleds diffracted through thousands of tiny threads that seemed to fill the chamber in a drifting fog. A dim light filtered into the grotto from the cave mouth through which they had entered. Echoes sounding in this rock cage will not be those of happy fishing. Denny looked at Shout, unsure she had understood the poet's fancy trinary.
Oh, yes. When Toshio sets the fuses, we'd better get outside. The explosion will reverberate in this chamber.
Kipiru nodded in agreement. The expedition's military commander had been mostly silent all the way here from the ship. Denny looked around the underwater cavity. Coral-like, microscopic scavengers had built their castle on the rich silicate rocks of an ocean hillock. The structure had grown slowly, but when the mound finally breached the ocean surface, top life became possible. Among the vegetation which had sprouted was the drill tree. That plant somehow pierced the mound's metal core and penetrated to organically useful layers beneath the island. Minerals were drawn up and deposited above. A cavity grew below, which would eventually accept the metal mound into the crust again. Something struck the ecologist in Denny as odd about this arrangement. The tiny micro-branch library aboard Streaker hadn't mentioned the metal mounds at all, which was also curious. It was hard to believe the drill tree could evolve into its niche in a gradual way, as most species did. For the tree to succeed was an all-or-nothing proposition, requiring great power and perseverance. How did it get that way? Denny wondered. And what happened to the mounds after they fell into the cavities the drill trees prepared for them? She had seen some pits which had swallowed their mounds. Their depths were cloudy and obscure, and apparently far deeper than she would have expected. She shone her beam on the bottom of the mound. The reflections were really quite startling. Denny had expected something ragged and irregular, not a field of bright concave pits on the shining metal underside. She swam to one of the larger depressions, bringing up her camera. Charlie Dart would like pictures and samples from this trip. She knew better than to expect thanks. More likely each tantalizing photo or rock would send him into exasperated sighs over her failure to follow up obvious leads. Deep within one of the pits, something moved, a twisting and slow turning. Denny reoriented her beam and peered closer. It was a root of some sort. She watched several of the tiny drifting threads fly within reach of the hanging tendril, to be caught and drawn within. She grabbed at a few for her sample bag.
"Let's go, Denny," she heard Toshio call. There was a thrumming sound as a sled moved just beneath her.
"Come on, we've only got 5 minutes till they blow."
"Okay, okay," she said. "Give me a minute."
Professional curiosity momentarily overwhelmed other thoughts. Denny could think of no reason why a living thing should burrow into the lightless underside of a mass of almost pure metal. She reached far into the pit and grabbed the twisting tendril root, then braced herself against the bulk of the mound and pulled hard. At first, the springy root was adamant and seemed even to pull back. The possibility that she had trapped herself vividly occurred to Denny. The root tore free suddenly. Denny glimpsed a shiny hard tip as she stuffed the specimen into a sample bag. He flipped and kicked away from the metal surface. Kipiru looked at her reproachfully as she grabbed the sled. He gunned the machine toward the cave entrance and out into the daylight where Toshio and Sayout waited. Moments later, a loud concussion sent booming echoes through the shallows.
They waited an hour, then re-entered the grotto.